It is Saturday, October 30th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Week in Geek News. In the second half, your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics open daily at 2808 Socal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Join the car guys, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers for their advice on things automotive and just about everything else on Car Talk every Sunday at 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. I'm Lyle Troxel. In the air and with me is Al Luckow. Good morning, Al Luckow.
Hello, everybody.
And Al is a new media architect, as I recall.
Yes.
We also have Lindsay Lonnie, and Lindsay Lonnie is a system analyst. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning.
And we have Alex Leas in Southern California, and Alex is a security expert. Hello, Alex.
Good morning, Lyle.
So we're going to start off the news. First off, I want to mention that I haven't been here for 2 weeks, and I got to say, I think my geek cred has dropped severely. Just the other day, I was having trouble with a Windows problem. You know, that's pretty serious. I'm not talking about a computer problem. I'm talking about a window in general. My son was replacing a broken window, and we had some difficulty, but he was awesome. So in any case, that's my my lack of geek cred, and I'm hoping that within the next hour, I'll feel more up to snuff. If anybody has any advice for me.
Well, we could look at the 10 things that, you know, make you a geek.
Well,
if we want to look at this, you know.
This is like instructions?
Well, it's something I found on WikiHow, and it's a thing that, you know, how to become a geek, and it's got the listing of things here. So, you know, with you being gone, maybe we should just figure out if you still are a geek or not.
Let's do that. That sounds good. What's the first step?
Well, do you subscribe to any specialty magazine or journal, like Nuts and Volts or Cinefex or something like that?
I have to both of those in the past. I don't currently, but I do subscribe to Make Magazine. Is that good enough?
That's good enough, I think. I think that's good.
I think we can check that box.
All right, yes. Good. And, of course, I do read a lot. I mean, I know this magazine, but this thing sounds a lot out to date because, of course, I'm subscribed to a lot of mailing lists for development and such.
Yes. Right? Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
You need to be...
Anyone can take this, change their life and become a geek.
Certainly,
just
yes.
With this list right here.
Yes. Okay. What are you obsessed with? You have to have some topic that you're obsessed with. Something, you know. You have to spend your life talking about something all the time.
Being a geek. Is technology not good? It needs to be like a narrow focus, right?
It needs to be something. If you choose a specific topic, you need to know more about it. A lot of things.
See, I think I'm going to have to improve myself because I don't think I've got one of those, really. I mean, I'm pretty...
You're just a geek of all trades.
Well, that's kind of my role. You know, I need to do that.
Well,
that's a difficult one.
Well, let's go to the next one.
Well, let me just say that I could pick something and just really get focused on it, but I don't think that's it's appropriate. Let's see how I do.
I think you're becoming obsessed with whether you're obsessed or not.
I think that's a good point.
So there you go. We have right. We have something there.
What's the next one?
Do you go to Wikipedia at least once a week or
at
daily?
At least once a day. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So that one, check that one. Do you have at least three small electronic gadgets? This is a silly question.
I have thousands of little gadgets.
You probably got three on you.
Let's see. One, two.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think so.
Okay.
Well, I got three on me.
They say in here, never wear clothes that are in style.
Lindsay?
The Geek Speak shirt. I'd say that's in style, though.
I think it's in style.
I'm wearing the Geek Speak shirt today.
That seems to work for me. They say nerdy clothes from the 80s are...
Okay. I'm going to have to say that from my 10 years of being a geek expert, I'm going to say that that one's wrong. Yeah. I think that geek chic is way in.
Yes, I do,
you know?
Too.
I mean, if you look at the three of us, all three of us are dressed pretty well. Let's see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've all got the jeans and some sort of...
Yeah, we all got jeans on, of course.
Right.
So right off the bat. So really, they should change this to get a pair of jeans.
Well, see, we're also all geeks, so of course we think we're dressing fine.
just slightly skewed there.
To us, this all makes sense.
Now, Alex, we're actually on video with you, so we can
Dr.
see you.
Dr. Don gave me the thumbs down, so
we're not
hip.
Well,
Dr. Don says that I need a costume.
What does she know?
We're dressed
again, she's a doctor, so we can't read her writing.
Yeah.
Bye, Don. All right. So,
okay, then let's see what else we have here. Do you know C++, Java, Visual Basic, or any other programming language?
Yes, I know those three.
Yeah, so that's overkill in that area.
Yeah, it's probably overkill.
They talk about learning as much as you can about computers and electronics. That's a silly one.
I have a degree in electronics.
Yeah, so we won't worry about that.
Okay.
Do you watch any cult classics like the original Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings?
Harry Potter is not a cult classic.
That's what they say in this thing. I know. I'm
a classic about it. It's written the last 5 years.
I know.
Excuse me. It's probably 6 years. I'm going to get email. Yeah. Yes, all those things, of course.
Yes. Did you ever play D&D or
yes.
any geeky RPGs?
Sure. Okay.
Well,
sure.
I guess we're pretty much that. You have friends that are geeks.
No.
I have associates that are geeks.
Yes.
Geeks don't have.
I
think I'm fine.
I think you're all right. I think you passed.
All right.
Yeah, I give him a...
All right, then in that case, let's get on with the topic of the week. It's Halloween tomorrow. I don't know if anyone noticed.
Well, unless you're listening to this in the future.
Which you probably are because of our podcast.
We do a lot of podcasts.
Speaking of podcasts, okay, listen. If you're listening to this on a podcast, I'm talking to you. Last week's episode, which was the week that I wasn't there, second week I wasn't there, Miles hosted, that episode you probably don't have in your feed. So go back to iTunes and make sure to grab that because it's going to be stacked right on top of this one. And it's going to be dated wrong, but it's about plastic. Okay. So you're right. People haven't – people might be reading this future, but let's talk about Halloween anyway. When I think of Halloween, I think of scary, dark – exactly. That's more music. So, Lindsay, do you have a story about like something dark, creepy, or something about death?
Do I ever? Okay. Basically, I found a neat article in Discovery where it talks about inventors and scientists whose deaths were associated with their invention or discovery. So there's about 7 of them.
Okay.
And I'll go through a couple of these.
Are these famous people?
Yeah, okay. They're all famous people.
Well, why don't we do thematically do this during the show? We'll come back to a death every once in a while. Okay.
Sure.
Who's up first?
Okay. Up first is something more recent that most people have probably heard of. It's Jimmy Hazelden, who was the owner of the British company Hesco Bastian that produces Segways. So, he died in a tragic Segway accident. Police reported that he was Segwaying around a river and he fell off a cliff into the river. He wasn't the actual inventor, though. It was Dean Kamen. So this one was sort of recent.
That was recent.
Yeah.
I had never heard the ending of that story. Did he actually, ride accidentally off a cliff with the Segway?
That's what they're saying. But I couldn't find any, detailed account of it.
Well, I read that story. There was a cliff, and there was a guy at the bottom of the cliff
with a Segway
next to him.
Next to him. Okay.
That so
pretty much does it. Yeah.
Okay.
There's no video footage,
you can't pick up a Segway and carry it. So it was probably carrying it.
Yeah.
So I'll be going on about different people that we can pay
tribute
to.
Give us one more right now.
Okay. Harry Houdini. How about that?
Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
So I didn't...
Talk about a geek.
Yeah, seriously. I didn't realize what had killed him. I thought it was one of his tricks that had killed him. But he had some other thing that he did, which was a physical trick, where he would take multiple blows to his upper body and not get hurt. And so he had an appendicitis inflammation. And some kids, college kids, showed up to one of his shows and asked him to do that trick. They wanted to hit him. And he let them hit him a few times. And unfortunately, one of the hits had burst his appendix. And they weren't able to save him from the toxic stuff that happens after that. So after all that stuff, but they did end up burying him in the prop casket that he used for one of his acts.
One of the things that Houdini did, he was really... a skeptic. He did a lot of skeptic work. And one of the things he did was, he did seance type tricks, as most magicians at that time did. But he set up a whole paradigm for kind of helping to prove, if you will, that he wasn't, that there wasn't an afterlife.
Mm.
So he set up this whole thing where he would try after death to come back and give certain information. And that stuff he wrote down and sealed it so that later people could check if he was coming back from the dead. It's kind of cool.
Interesting.
I don't think it's ever happened, though, unfortunately. Hmm. All right. The other thing I think about Halloween, it's funny. Those stories about death, it's like we mysticize death and like the spookiness and stuff, but you know, the actual story about death doesn't feel very Halloween-y.
Yeah.
Halloween-y is about like pumpkins and candy and things of that nature too. So Alex, got any candy stories for us?
Sure, I got a little security and candy story for you.
That's true, of course. make sure that your candy's not opened.
Well, sort of. Down in Australia, they have their students actually taking attendance with fingerprint scanners in some of their schools. I'm not sure how many of their schools, but I know it's been something that's been going on. And it's just their high-tech way, simple way of finding out what students are there. Well, one thing that's been noted is that fingerprint scanners are fallible. Using gelatin, aka the same stuff that is made in gummy bears, you can take other people's fingerprints off there or fabricate false fingerprints and basically check in for your friend by putting a little gummy bear on your thumb and popping that on the little screen.
No way. Is that easy?
And they can check in. I mean, it's not that easy, but
well,
I love the idea.
Of
gelatin and yeah.
Well, is it a molded gelatin thing or is it like...
You have to basically take your fingerprint and print it with, you know, with a gelatin. I mean, it's not like you buy gummy bears in the store because they already have a shape, but you know, you need to get some sort of clear gelatin that's basically
the same
stuff.
Couldn't you take a gummy bear and just warm it up a little bit with like a...
You might be able to. I'm actually curious if there's been any tests where people have used real gummy bears.
I know. I love that idea. I love the idea that you know students start doing this thing where you know you got to have this tech. They're like, well, there's ways to defeat it, but it's too rare, too rare. And a kid just pulls out jelly beans and jelly bears and stuck them in the finger. It's great.
And
all
then
right,
eat the
bears,
evidence.
And then eat the evidence. That's right. Awesome. Well, thank you for the candy story. I appreciate that. Any more? Let's see. I guess pumpkin stuff would be next on our list. Al, do you got some Halloween pumpkin story?
I have a virtual pumpkin carving.
If you don't want to get your hands dirty?
Yeah, like, you know, there's all this goop that, you know, which I think is the fun part.
Oh, man, I got to carve pumpkins today.
Yeah. We're actually carving our second set. We carved them a couple weeks ago, but, you know, those don't really last very long out in California. You put your pumpkin out, and a couple days later, it's completely full of mold and fuzz.
Sure.
And, you know, so we actually had to buy another couple pumpkins to kind of make it to Halloween. Anyhow, this is a virtual pumpkin, and we'll have the link on geekspeak.org. It's actually really fun. You go in, and you just got a pumpkin on the webpage. I don't know if it's done in Flash or not. Might be. But the thing that's interesting about it is that you can carve your own pumpkin. It's got a little candle that's animated inside there. So as you carve, you get the light showing through. You can also link to your link to your Facebook account, which, well... Everything links to your face. But what you do is you can carve a pumpkin out of somebody's face. So you pull in their picture and then you bring it in here and then it carves this pumpkin out of the Facebook picture.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
You could do a webcam carve. You can do, you know, so you can carve it by yourself, and then you can save the pumpkin and post it on, you know, Facebook or whatever.
All right.
So it's pretty neat to do. It's actually kind of fun. I'd like to
virtual
see
carving.
Some people do some virtual pumpkin carving.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. How about some real? Like, I want to get my hands dirty tonight and get some slop out of the pumpkin. Something more real, but geeky still. Lindsay,
I think there is an R2-D2 pumpkin, and I think this is the droid you're looking for.
This is the pumpkin we're looking for.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Of course.
This guy named Neil Dickover has a site called Fantasy Pumpkins, and he spends like 10 to 30 hours doing schematics that are accurate to scale,
mm-hmm.
and then making stencils and patterns to carve the outside of the pumpkin in, you know, different depths and stuff. So he doesn't normally carve through where it starts to mold,
right.
but you can put the light inside. This R2-D2 pumpkin is really cool looking. I'll put a link up there.
Right.
But he allows, he shares what he does and puts instructions on his website so you can make them too.
Cool. His, all right, I like that idea. I think I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah.
I like the look of pumpkin carving where you don't actually break through the entire pumpkin. You only take out the material.
Yeah.
And it glows more than shines. All right, cool. Let's see, I don't have the next one lined up. That was a pretty good Halloween grab. Let's go ahead and do an update on a death.
Okay.
After that.
So the next one I've got in line, let me see. I've got the Irishman Thomas Andrews. He was one of the architects behind the infamous Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a dutiful shipbuilder and was, of course, aboard the Titanic's maiden voyage. So he was a good one.
I wonder if that's one of those things where you know, the iceberg gets hit, it starts to flood, and he's trying to figure out, like geeks do, like, well, okay, what's going to happen here?
Right.
Well, then that's going to happen. Like, if he's figuring it out before anybody else,
I'm
and
sure.
goes, oh, man.
Oh, man. Get to the lifeboat. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a pretty sad
one.
I've got another one up here. So the geeky thing, you know, these people are geeks, right?
Well, engineers.
Inventors and engineers and stuff like that. And with Day of the Dead coming up, I figured it's good to honor those who have gone before us and given us good technologies and stuff like that. And so I have a special place in my heart for Madame Marie Curie.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she was good.
She's famous. Yeah,
yeah, seriously famous. She was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize, and she was the first person to win two Nobel Prizes.
And her research is on?
Radium and polonium, two highly radioactive elements. And
keep in mind, when she worked with them, no one knew anything about them, really.
Right.
She kind of figured them out,
exactly.
Unfortunately.
And she worked her entire life elbow deep in radioactive elements, but she still lived to be over 60. But at the time, they said that she had a condition called aplastic anemia, where the bone marrow stops producing red blood cells. But now we know it was radiation poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, thanks for going before us.
You know, it's funny. That seems very noble. An engineer that doesn't do a good job in the Titanic sense doesn't sound very noble. Not that I'm blaming that guy. I'm sure the Titanic was a Titanic failure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and, Alex, you want to do it? Now, normally you don't do robot stories, but it is your turn, and I'd like some robot stories. So would you mind?
All right. Well, how about robots who have hands without fingers?
That sounds Halloween-y.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been some work going on with creating robot hands that are basically can grab onto almost anything. I mean, if it can wrap itself around maybe a quarter or so of the object, it can pick it up. And the way it does it, it's got these kind of balloon-like blobby things on the ends of its of little stubs. And inside is like either coffee grains or like a glass spheres, you know, kind of depends on what they're trying. And they suction out the air out of the little balloon. And so because of the grains, it gives it some shape to it. It's a little bit, you can be molded around items. So you just kind of put it up against an item. And as you suck the air out, it forms itself around whatever object it's trying to pick up. And it just grips it.
You know, I helped myself with understanding your story by going and looking at the imagery, because it's really hard to understand what you're saying. But so a sphere, a balloon filled with some kind of hard material. If you also add air, it becomes kind of squishy. No problem, right? Like balls of sand in it.
Right.
You can kind of move it around. So you push this movable ball onto a glass or something else to pick up, right? And you kind of squish it around it. And if you pulled it back off, it would come right off. But instead, you suck all the air out of it. And then those grains connect together like a solid, and now you've got a solid that's perfectly molded to the thing you want to pick up. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Neat.
I like it. Go watch the video if you don't understand it still.
It's like a bladder.
Yeah, I'll definitely get the link up. There's some really cool pictures and video there.
And all the stuff we talk about on GeekSpeak, of course, we put up on the GeekSpeak website. And you're welcome to look at that historically even. From 2002, I think, was when we started doing that. Okay, well, let's see. Candy, death, pumpkins. Skeletons? Oh, cool.
Skeletons.
Right.
I think, you know, when I think about the geek obsessive subject, I think this actually probably would qualify as something. Of course, the subject happens to be knitting. There's a guy, his name is Ben Cuvis, and he has knitted a complete realistic human skeleton.
Knitted?
He has knitted it. It's part of an art collective called the Wasaic Project. And you look at these pictures, and this is a skeleton. It's completely knitted.
Wow.
I mean, it's really awesome. I mean, I'm not really into... Check this out.
I'm not so much into...
Yes, it's all knit. He just knitted the whole thing. He's got vertebrae and a skull and, like, amazing detail all over the place. It's really cool. Who could even think of knitting a skeleton?
Is there like a wire frame, or it's just what he used to knit is,
you know,
something
what?
Stiff? Or
it's there's got to be something in there, but the thing just sits up by itself, and it's pretty dang amazing. I mean, yeah, I think he must have some kind of wire wire in there because I don't know how it would stand up. But
it wouldn't stand up.
It's like a perfect human skeleton that's been knitted.
Fantastic.
So
his mom must be so proud of him for using those knitting skills for great things like this.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, then, you see stuff like this and then you think, well, maybe knitting is kind of cool, you know?
Knitting is way cool.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, you don't let me think of scarves and socks and stuff like that. But
when geeks knit.
When geeks knit.
It's kind of warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's. I think we've covered effectively Halloween topic on Geek Speak, and I think we can move on to any topics at this point. So you've got we can officially label this show Halloween show.
Okay.
Let's see who's next. If we knitted skeleton, then we're gonna have to have Lindsay go next. Well, you could do a death to kind of round up our
to round up.
Maybe you can keep doing it if you feel like it. Go ahead.
All right. How about this one, Horace Lawson Hunley?
Say it again, slower.
Horace Lawson Hunley.
Okay, that's a great name.
There's a great name.
That's a fantastic name.
Yes.
Horace Lawson Hunley.
He was a marine engineer in the Confederate Army, and he was the person who invented the submarine.
Oh, cool. No, I thought Bushnell invented the submarine. Oh, go on.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe the thing that I read wasn't accurate. We'll have to fact check later.
There must have been a group of people, but go on.
Maybe he was Union. I don't know. the submarine.
British, actually.
The H.L. Hunley. The first failed attempt to attack a Union blockade in Charleston Harbor killed nearly half the crew. And then Hunley decided to go on the second adventure trying to break up the blockade, and the entire crew, including him, was killed on the second attempt. They actually used the submarine and tried a third attempt and were successful this time. And they sank a Union ship, but shortly after the submarine sank the Union ship, the submarine sank. And so they just dug it up after 132 years, and now it's part of a museum thing where you can go and learn all about it. And
well, that sounds kind of cool.
Hunley. Yeah, I'd like to go see it.
Where is
that? I think
that'd
be interesting. It's just outside of Charleston Harbor.
Huh. That'd be a neat thing.
So the Turtle, also called the American Turtle, was the world's first submarine with a documented record of use in combat. It was invented by Old Saybrook, Connecticut, in 1775 by American patriot David Bushnell as a means of attaching explosive charges to ships at harbor. Hmm. Bushnell designed it for use against British Royal Navy vessels occupying North America harbors during the American Revolutionary War. So I would say it's not the first, but he was probably the engineer of that one.
Was that a manned?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's really cool. Anyway, sorry, that's a bit of history. I'm related to Bushnell.
Excellent.
Really?
Yeah. He's my dad's uncle's family line. Anyway.
Wow.
Nice.
See, the turtle's like a little...
Excellent.
But this thing was manned and probably powered. The ones you're talking about, I wonder what the difference is on the...
I don't think there was much.
Of course, it's
a few
years for the American Revolution. Versus,
yeah.
What's that?
At the time, that one was... Bushnell made that.
This was peddled.
Peddled, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
so
it
I mean, by the, is that one the powered, first powered submarine?
I believe it is. Yeah.
It's probably the case. The timeline seems about right.
It has similarities to the modern ones. It's the H.L. Hunley.
H.L. Hunley. Okay, well, he's got to be the inventor of it then, right?
At least of the Hunley, yeah.
And guess how I found that information?
Well, you knew it because you're
Wikipedia.
Related to that guy.
I knew that by Wikipedia.
Oh, Wikipedia. Yeah.
There you go. Done right. For the day.
Okay. Fulfilled your
check.
Daily
check.
Requirement.
All right. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Sure.
Well, let me let people know what they're doing right now. What you're doing right now is listening to GeekSpeak. Sorry for you. GeekSpeak is on KOSP, supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, we have Lindsay, Al, and on Skype, actually, we have Alex. So thanks, geeks, for being here. My name's Lyle, and in the other room we have Rick. Now, Rick is almost never on air. Actually, I think he's been on air only recorded once, but he's been doing this gig for about 7 years, something
like
that. Amazing time. Mm-hmm. And what he does is every day he sits in the other room, and he's waiting to take your calls with questions and comments on technology. Now, I mention this because, of course, I'm inviting you to call with comments or questions about technology. The number is 1-800-655-5877. That's right, it's toll-free. 1-800-655-5877. One more time, shall we? 1-800-655-5877. We will take your calls with any questions about questions or comments about technology. If you have an interesting Halloween geeky story, please give us a ring. Sounds like a good way to break the ice. And if you've got a question about your broke computer, what kind of Wi-Fi gear you're going to buy, why your cat sits on top of your monitor, you know, all those kind of questions, feel free to give us a ring. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Well, while we're waiting for calls to come in, let's go ahead and grab another story. One we just did was strangely enough, the death. Oh, that's right, it was a death one. So right. Let's go ahead and jump over to Al. Al, you told me about something kind of cool you did this last week.
Oh, yeah. I did a story a while ago about founder dating. It's where people get together, entrepreneurs, and they – it's sort of like dating, but it doesn't have anything to do with like dating. But, you know, getting together with other people who have ideas and, you know, coming up with something. Well, turns out they had a founder dating event this past week, Tuesday. And, you know, I applied. You have to apply to get in there. I guess it's kind of tricky to get into it because you have to have certain things like...
The geek test?
Yeah, it's kind of like a geek test, you know? And I guess a lot of people try to get in, and I did it with, another friend of mine, and it turns out I got in. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go. It was in Palo Alto. So I go down there, and, you know, it's basically a lot of people. It looks like they, when I went through the list, that there's a lot of people from... you know, highly educated. The general idea or the general gist I got out of it was that they were somewhat on the younger side, you know, I would say in the 20s. Mm. And every single one of them had a title of CEO somehow. And I look and I look, you graduated like what, last year? And, well, anyway.
High school?
Yeah.
No, I mean, they're Founders Day. I mean, the idea is that you get the founders, right?
So, right.
And of course, people that are running multimillion-dollar companies and they were the founder, like, you know, Hewlett Packard, you know, Hewlett or something like that. They're not going to come to this.
No.
So it makes sense to be the younger.
It's entrepreneurs, and you get together and think of ideas. It was a little weird because everybody was supposed to be there for their own reason as their own company. Mm-hmm. So you end up with a lot of people
that want.
Yeah, they're all the same person. So I kind of would have been neater if there was like more of a variety of the type of person there so you could make connections. But here it was more like, you know, basically a whole bunch of bosses, you know, so I'm wondering what would be the outtake from something like that.
Were you passing out a lot of steel? Your business card?
Yeah, I passed out my card a few times and I talked to people and I've been in this startup, you know, industry for quite a while.
A few times, yeah.
You know, and so I'm familiar with this kind of thing. I was just, you know, there was a lot of things there that, you know.
So the question is, I mean, it's founders dating.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hook up?
Well, you know, not really, but it was definitely a worthwhile thing. It's a neat organization. I guess the woman behind Jessica Alta, or at least this one, and it's worthwhile going. It's neat to see what's happening and what are the new things out there, and what's the climate. What are the bandwagons everybody seems to be jumping on?
Right.
You know.
Well, did you notice any trends in the startup world right now?
Yeah. Social networking.
Yeah. Really.
You know,
surprise.
Nothing new there. So.
Right.
But other than that, you know.
Did all these people have a Facebook app?
Well, they had there was a lot of different ideas there, and part of the deal with this is that you're not really allowed to talk about the things that you discuss.
Oh,
you know,
sorry, yeah,
you can't talk.
So I can't really say anything specific.
Well, yeah, but, you have been talking on the radio about it.
But it's but I mean, it's like there's a lot of ideas, and you know, some of them are neat, some of them, you know, have been around a while, but it's kind of cool to see people doing these things. And it was in Palo Alto and Silicon Valley. I mean, this is where these things happen. And, you know, you look at a lot of innovators are you know, people out of school, great ideas. It's, mm-hmm. You just need to see fresh perspectives and high hopes and all that kind of stuff.
That's cool. All right. You know, thank you.
It was kind of fun. Yeah. It was
thank you.
Founders
sir.
Dating.
Founders
yeah.
Dating. All right. Alex, Southern California. It's raining up here. Is it down there?
Actually, it was raining last night and early this morning, but it's cleared up and looks like it'll be a nice day.
So lots of car accidents today.
Yeah.
What's going on with I don't know, people jailbreaking? What is jailbreaking?
Well, we know that with the iPhone, it was made legal to jailbreak your iPhone so that you could install or run pretty much whatever you want on your phone. However, it seems a student in Southern California was recently arrested for essentially jailbreaking gaming consoles. I mean, yes and no. He was breaking his, but he was breaking it for other people. Right now they're trying to accuse him for, and it may be true. I'm not sure of the details, cause it's still an active case. They literally just arrested him on Monday. But he was basically jailbreaking different gaming consoles, either Wii, PlayStation, Xbox, you know, those different consoles, so that people can run games that are non-DRM or have the DRM removed, the right. Encryption technology that's on the video games.
Now, so specifically what jailbreaking is if your system is developed by some company and the company wants you to be very restrictive with a device you have, an iPhone's an example of this, you're only allowed on an iPhone to run applications that come from the App Store that Apple runs. So if you wanted to put your applications on from some other source, it's quite complicated unless you crack them, you break the measures that stop it from running anything. So you go and you what's called jailbreak, you basically remove the security features that force you to only look at the Apple Store. And then you can put other things on it, no problem. And it starts working as a more open device. And a lot of devices do this. And one of the biggest reasons has to do with digital rights management. If you have something that can decode digital rights, play video that are protected, then that has to be the secret on how that works has to be protected to some degree. So that's always the kind of argument. The Millennium Copyright Act actually makes it a federal offense to circumvent any security. So theoretically, breaking your phone, your personal iPhone, cracking it so you can put other stuff on it is a felony offense, as is consoles, game consoles and stuff. But recently, we covered on Geek Speak about 3 weeks ago or so, maybe longer than that, there was a court case that said, you know what, cracking your iPhone is not an offense, even with the Millennium Copyright Act. We are going to kind of overwrite that. So when you say it's not legal, it's now legal to do that, just basically because there was a court case that said it's not illegal to do it. So is that right, Alex? Did I kind of cover that?
Yeah, more or less. I think that, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, the DMCA, I think, is tends to be a bit more specific about cryptographic technologies, mm-hmm. And circumventing the encryption. However, the valid case that he is claiming as to why he does this and is that people can copy their games, make backup copies in essence. Every game people, especially the ones that are played most, are going to get scratched. They're going to get damaged. And basically saying this is so that people who can make backups and play off of those backup copies and not the original encrypted versions.
And this pretty fair use case that says if you've owned some kind of media, like a VHS tape, it's actually legal to make a copy for yourself just so that you are protecting yourself from fire. Right? I mean, that's one of the general concepts. So
exactly.
That's always been kind of a fair use for copying things.
Yeah. And so, it's his real motivations, who knows? But right now the case is going to go, if he's actually found guilty, I think they're trying to get him on two counts. And it's basically, we could carry a potential maximum prison sentence of 10 years.
Wow.
Which is, that's pretty hefty.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the line about this personal use kind of thing is complicated, right? So if you and I have our game consoles, we don't want to spend the time to crack them to make them work so that we can do other things like burn copies of our games for protection. And we know someone that can do it. We could ask them to do it. And then if that person gets into the business, like I'm assuming this person did, start doing it with a lot of people, and then one other person starts kind of making illegal copies with their system and selling the games, who's responsible there in that chain? You know, the person that removed the copyrighted or the person that removed the lockdown features of the console to some degree is kind of responsible. So I guess that's what's going on. I'm assuming that he'll get good legal representation because that's a perfect case for the Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Sure. And I think they're also trying to get one, I think some of the legal or the prosecuting legal counsel is trying to block potential testimony from an expert who actually wrote a book on hacking the Xbox and jailbreaking the Xbox and how that works. So I'm guessing there's a lot of technical detail that could come out that might be a good defense for him.
Right.
And that, you know, of course, as doing this, you're supposed to do in prosecution. You're supposed to nail them no matter what, even if they're, you know, potentially innocent. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that story, Alex. I just want to remind people you can call in with questions and comments about technology. The topic is wide open today. You can call us anything you'd ask about anything you'd like. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. That's anywhere in the continental U.S., Hawaii, I think Canada. Man, just try it from anywhere if you're listening live. If you're not listening live, you're doing the podcast thing, go ahead and go to our website and ask us questions there. And sometimes we do cover them on air. That's at geekspeak.org. All the information about today's show, the links, what we're talking about, things of that nature, and of course, the MP3 to download directly is available at geekspeak.org. Thank you, Alex, for that story. We didn't do a geek bit. Al, you've got one.
Sure. There's a bunch of them, but I think what I'll do is the one that you and I did today.
Yeah, that was cool.
There's an application called Tango.
On the iPhone?
Well, actually, it works on the 3GS, it works on the iPhone 4, it works on the Evo 4G, and it works on the Galaxy S. All right, so this is an app, And what it does, it's similar to FaceTime, which is on Apple's platform, but it lets you video talk over 3G. So no Wi-Fi. You don't have to be in a Wi-Fi area to talk back and forth with somebody. Works pretty well. We tried it. Lyle and I tried it. And it's kind of neat because, you know, I talked about a story a few weeks ago about Yahoo's service that is you can download a Yahoo's app and it's Yahoo Messenger, and then you can talk with people over video over 3G. But, you know, the video is really bad. I mean, Yahoo video was bad already, and it's just doesn't get any better to put it on a mobile device. But this Tango is pretty good. I was kind of impressed with its performance. It's got a couple little bugs here and there, like you pointed out.
Yeah.
But kind of a neat thing, and like I said, it's not just an iPhone app. It's also works on the Evo and the Galaxy.
And again, it's called?
It's called Tango.
Like you're dancing with video, baby.
Yeah.
just an update on the Hunley submarine, the HL Hunley. She was the first combat submarine to sink an enemy warship. Guess the Bushnell one, the Turtle, never actually sunk anything.
Well, they did call it the Turtle.
It's true.
And he did have to pedal it.
He did have to pedal it underwater.
So, I don't know.
Well, you know what? It's also one of those things where that was the American Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, you can't really pedal far enough to get to a battleship in combat.
Yeah.
But in a harbor, like as a sneak attack kind of thing, mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense.
Reconnaissance. Or what you call
it. It had this, the Turtle submarine mm-hmm. had this great little, they put a mine on the top of the submarine. Mm-hmm. And then he'd pedal under a ship and uh-huh. push up against the bottom of the ship. And then you'd run a drill bit that would attach into the wood bottom of the ship mm-hmm. and then detach the mine mm-hmm. or the bomb, mm-hmm. and then you pedal away,
and then you pedal fast,
and then you trigger it, and then you trigger it by a wire you'd pull or something. Oh man, yeah. I do not want that job.
I know, yeah,
kamikaze mission.
Totally. Wow, it's strange.
Still inventive, though.
I didn't listen to last week's Geek Speak episode because the podcast still. I finally put it up last night, but do you get a lot of calls last week?
Actually, we did.
We did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So why aren't you calling today, people? You can hear me call. Ask us questions. We've got more news, but ask us questions. 800-655-5877. Of course, we have a call now that I said that. Oh, well. Should we take it? Yeah, let's do that. I don't know. What do you think?
Make them wait.
Elizabeth from Aptos, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, I'm calling about my MacBook. I actually talked to you guys maybe a month ago, and I was having a lot of different problems with, websites loading and words disappearing when I type and all kinds of things. And it seems like I just keep having more problems. Like now PopChar is not working. And
what's not working?
PopChar?
It's for type.
What's that?
Isn't that for seeing your text, your type?
No, it's the PopChar where it has like different symbols.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you can see what your keyboard, your text keyboard is.
Optional keyboard settings, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's not working at all?
Doesn't give me the right.
So you call up like weeks ago, and we chat with you on air, and then we get advice and stuff, and then it doesn't work at all. And you think the second time it's going to work, this time we're going to know more.
Yeah,
oh, you have too much faith in us.
No, okay. I know. Maybe I shouldn't call
you. What have you done to fix the problem?
Well, I took it to the quote unquote best Mac guy in town who has done it for over an hour and thought my computer had too many extra things on it and took some things off and nothing changed. And then my husband actually reinstalled the whole system.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that didn't do anything.
So you reinstalled the entire, you erased the drive and reinstalled the entire system?
No, I didn't.
You upgraded the system.
Archive install.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And is this completely reliable? It always does the same problem? Like if you reboot and then did something and then like that app's not working and then you try it again and it's still not working?
No, I mean it.
It's inconsistently strange.
It sort of varies. Yeah, it kind of varies what it does wrong.
Going with the theme of today, it's kind of spooky.
It has more and more things that just seem to not work right.
So, like, just text is not showing up or something? How?
No, like if I write an Entourage mm-hmm. or on Facebook or sometimes on Word, I could have, say I want to delete something and I highlight one letter, it will delete every word. Actually, I've had the case where I write an email and then realize several words are in the email are repeated, like things that I deleted and repasted, or deleted and wrote something else, it repasted.
This
the word
is very,
I don't
this,
know. It's
just
really
it's
things I can't even.
It's haunted.
It may be haunted.
It's a haunted computer.
Yeah. Okay, I have some actually serious responses. If you've done an archive install of the OS and reinstalled, it is possible that the software problems. But I think at this point you're probably going to assume that I'm assuming there's a hardware problem. And there's a couple things. User interface devices breaking can do really strange things, like a keyboard or a mouse can do some stuff that's a little wonky, right? So the selecting and then all of a sudden it selects the whole word can actually be a bad mouse or trackpad. The other option is that your keyboard actually has some problems with it. And I know those seem like little strange ways of thinking about it, but if that's the case, if your keyboard is actually having difficulty, like when you depress a button, you're actually getting other things happening at the same time, you'd probably notice it when typing. But think about it that from that perspective. Think about if that's the possibility. Try plugging in a separate keyboard to your MacBook and running a different keyboard and a different mouse and see if the same things happen. The last thing is if you've got really strange things happening in your machine, it could be a RAM problem, though you'd probably see crashes more often than anything else than user interface problems.
No, it doesn't.
Try stopping to use the keyboard and mouse. Just stop using those things that are built in. Plug in external keyboard and mouse and use your machine for a while and see if the effect is different in that way. And keyboards get very dirty and they can fail.
I do use an external keyboard.
You do. Do you always use them? Have you tried plugging in without them or moving them?
I use the, what's it called?
Anyway, that's as much I'm going to be able to do on the radio, I think, on this one. It sounds like it's going to, I mean, you could, of course, completely erase your system and reinstall, assuming there's a bad, bad extension or something strange installed.
There's one other
thing.
That's
still going to move with an archive.
You could go into your settings of your keyboard and mouse pane in the system preferences, and there's a setting called delay until repeat.
Okay.
That a lot of times this causes a weird text thing to happen. Go in there and adjust that setting. It's simple to find. It's in preferences. You go down to the Apple menu, preferences, keyboard and mouse pane, and then just try that. And there's an article about this that I'm going to post in today's show notes.
Okay.
There is an issue similar to this in MacBook Pros that Apple has acknowledged. So you can check this article out and then, maybe that'll help you out.
And would that apply to the fact that the websites also don't load sometimes for 3 and 4 times, like I have to keep repeating it, that could be a mouse.
No, that sounds like a network problem.
Yeah, it sounds like either network or internet.
But see, this could be could be a bad logic board.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, if your machine keeps on repeating the last command, you're probably not loading pages with a refresh, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can also bring it into the Genius Bar because they will look at this stuff. I mean, you just make an appointment and go in there. I mean, they don't charge you.
No, not for that.
Yeah, you just go in and they just diagnose it. And there are some other really interesting things I found out about Macs is that if you have a broken screen, they have a fixed price. Just fix it no matter what. And it's reasonable.
Yeah.
So
thank you, Elizabeth, for the call.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Larry from Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Guys, thank you so much. I'll be very brief. Okay, what I have is kind of an older hybrid Dell desktop computer. I say kind of hybrid because it has about 32 gig SATA hard drive, and at the same time it has an older serial keyboard interface. I've got around the keyboard, by using a USB keyboard. And then I use a USB adapter for my mouse. Everything was working great until yesterday. By accident, I knocked down the desktop and went to the floor. Since then, the system won't boot up properly. What happens? I turn it on. I see Windows XP. It's trying to. After a few seconds, I see the screen that says normal mode. Safe mode, etc. Unfortunately, because it won't recognize my keyboard. I'm stuck. So,
right.
Any ideas? And then quickly, secondly, I was thought of maybe I could get it online.
Hang on a second. With the keyboard.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are you able to get into the BIOS with that keyboard?
No.
Okay.
No.
And it's a USB keyboard, right?
I'm using it to USB keyboard. Right. That's correct.
So the problem with a Windows machine is that the USB keyboard is actually a setting that you can set in your BIOS, your before your computer actually starts, you know, running the OS. The BIOS has a whole bunch of settings and different drivers for things, and you can actually turn off peripheral USB, which, you know, can make your machine stable and everything great and is useful sometimes, but not very useful when the external USB is your keyboard, which makes it completely unusable. In fact, you can't even get back in the BIOS. So what you need to do is get a PS2 keyboard, a different type of keyboard, and plug that in. This is going to have a green round connector on it, and use that one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that keyboard should function. Then you can get into BIOS.
Out of sight.
You can turn it back on. Okay?
Guys, thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for calling. Take care.
Bye.
I know how to.
It's been a while, Larry.
I know how to avoid that problem.
What's that?
Don't knock your computer off the table.
Well, there's that.
That's the preventative measure.
That's great. We haven't had a call from Larry in a long time. It's awesome, Larry. Thanks for calling. Yeah. It's cool to know that you're still listening. All right. From a little closer to home, Santa Cruz. Don, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Would you check the email I sent earlier about the thumbprint? It says thumbprint backwards. Because of the second subject on it, because
I thought about
it has
that.
A link.
Yeah.
You thought about that, too.
I did. I didn't get into it because it was so much fun to talk about the gummy bears. But so the point is that in the database, there's a thumbprint. So we were talking about the story that Alex covered earlier about security, that if you have a fingerprint scanning device, you can make a fake fingerprint using gelatin, and then the scanning device still sees it as the fingerprint. But what you've got to do is you've got to make a perfect fingerprint replica. If you depress your finger into gelatin and pull it out, what you have is a reverse image. Alex, I'm assuming, I know the answer. I mean, I think I know what the answer is, but let's go ahead and let you answer it, Alex. How they actually resolve that?
I don't know the details of how to actually make a fake fingerprint. As much as I'm the security guy,
here's my guess.
That.
It would be like the lost wax process.
Alex,
basically,
you could do it. A reverse mold would be very hard to do with gelatin. You'd lose a lot of detail, but it wouldn't be that hard to make a very thin film of gelatin that you put on your finger. You make sure it's clear, transparent. Mm-hmm. Then you put that down and. You don't put it backwards, upside down. You put it on the scanner, and it still sees the fingerprint because it's looking for lights and shadows. And in a transparent piece, if you then put like a piece of flesh-colored paper behind it, then a thin layer will still show the fingerprint on the other side, and it will not be mirrored. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It won't be backwards unless you print it like you would print a woodcut.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, if you did that, it would be problematic. What I'm saying is you take the gelatin, you get a liquidy gelatin, you put it on your thumb, and you make it very, very thin, like a little thin layer. Then you peel that off, and then where your thumb was, you put some kind of dark material. On the other side of this transparent piece of gelatin, you can still see the fingerprint on the outside of it, not the inside. And then you stick that on the scanner.
Can we move to the second thing? Because there's a link I want you to see.
All right.
The second thing was one of the things that would qualify you as a geek, and that is that you would have RC toys. And the link shows you an RC toy. Do you see it?
Awesome. You're asking me to, check on email through a show. I'm running a board. I got a Facebook.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
oh, it's awesome.
Later.
Yes, it's yours. Oh, Don, I want to come to your event. Yeah,
really?
Yeah, I saw your event at the coffee shop, and the night just got too busy for me. I couldn't go by.
Is this Lyle?
Yeah, this is Lyle.
Oh, great, because you made contact with me on Flickr, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
So, Don, the link that you sent, I'll put up on the show. This is basically wonderful images of small helicopter, RC helicopter.
And
it's really, really cool.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, and I'll see you.
Thank you, Don. All right, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, so now I got to go back to the thing. What were we doing? Geek Speak Show, that's right. Yeah. Let's take more calls, shall we?
Sure.
All right. We've got one more, and of course I've lost track of everything I'm doing, but yes, Dave from Santa Cruz. All right. Dave, welcome to Geek Speak.
I was downloading a TV episode, 45 minutes long, off of iTunes, and it took 5 hours. I want to know if this is normal.
No.
Nope. Yeah.
Well, that depends.
Are you sure you were downloading it? I mean, when you're in...
Downloading it.
So you're in iTunes. You said, I want to buy this episode.
Right.
You click on it, and then there's a little thing on the left column that says downloading, and there'll be a little spinning thing saying... Now, how fast is your internet connection? Are you aware of that, or do you have any idea?
I don't know. It's local internet, ISP.
Uh-huh. So it's DSL or something?
No, it's Yeah, DSL.
Okay, so you have enough speed to be able to handle something like that.
Well, that's the thing. What's happening is something's wrong with your connection, mm-hmm. I would assume.
Yeah.
And this could happen inside your home. So with DSL, you're getting what the provider provides you to your house is a clean phone signal. And then you get a DSL modem and it connects. The thing is, if inside your wiring your house is bad or the connection to the house is bad and they haven't checked, there could be a problem with the speed. And it can be really degraded. So inside the house, it's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you a lot of money to get your wiring fixed. There's a few things you can do, though, to kind of help make it faster. So one thing you want to do is go ahead and go to dslreports.com, dslreports.com. I think that's the one. You want to basically speed test your DSL line.
Yeah. That would be really handy to do. Also, don't you have to have a filter on all your phones, too, a DSL filter?
You do, but that's really for the phone calls. So the phone calls don't sound horrible.
That doesn't affect your DSL performance, I guess.
Is it possible that the ISP is putting on the back burner any sort of media traffic or anything like that? Or are you sharing your connection with other people?
Mm-hmm. No.
Is it over Wi-Fi or is it a direct wired connection to your computer?
Direct wire.
Direct wire. So that's be the fastest way to go. There's one other little tip I noticed with iTunes, especially when you get a TV episode. A lot of times when you get one, they'll give you both the standard and the HD version. If you don't want the HD version, look in your downloads as it's downloading, uncheck it because that one's big. You may just want to download the normal version and not have to download both of them. I know that I subscribe to Mad Men, and every episode comes down with standard and HD, so it is a pretty hefty download.
Yeah.
That might be just a small thing you can do that might speed things. So you said it's been going for 5 hours, or it took 5 hours to finally... It
took 5 hours to download.
Was this a full DV feature episode?
A full what?
It was
45 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it was in HD. It didn't have an alternate.
Yeah, I mean, that's not horrible speeds. It should be faster, but that's not horrible.
Yeah, yeah. It could be network traffic or something.
I think it's probably your connection in general. Go ahead and test your DSL with something like DSL reports. See if the performance is in that normal range for DSL. If it's not, contact your phone company or your local ISP if it's providing it and request them to test your phone system. And then keep in mind that if they go inside your house, it's going to cost you money.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'll put some links up in there.
Yeah, and also, Dave, you send an email to me. I can give you some tricks on making your phone system a little faster and better. Geekspeak.org. You can send us, contact us. Oh, great. I think we only have time to say a few things about KOSP, which I need to do right now. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Coming up in just a second is Al's USB of the Week. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by the Palo Alto Medical Foundation of Santa Cruz, with local doctors in Aptos, Capitola, Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, Soquel, and Watsonville. Details on finding a personal doctor at thedoctorforyou.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. Santa Cruz, we're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission.
Hi, this is Al Lucca with GeekSpeak's Crazy USB Device of the Week. With Halloween coming up, I thought it might be nice to see what there was out there in the realm of USB Halloween devices. Well, listener Mark Mabee sent this one in to me. Let's see how it works. Hey Barbara, check out my iPhone. Hey Bob, look at this. Yes, it's the Alien Umbilical Cord iPhone Charger. It's about 2 feet long and in a kinked-shaped, pinky, blue-veined appearance of an umbilical cord. For those of you really addicted to your iPhones, I guess you could make some analogy here. By the way, if you happen to find any stem cells floating around this thing, you're on your own. I have no idea what the current ruling on that is. Anyhow, see the photo up from the link on geekspeak.org.